Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is Mona Montgomery with another edition of The Hola Hoax. Did you know there were no gas chambers in Germany? That 6 million Jews were not killed by Hitler? And that Hitler had no plan to exterminate the Jews? The so-called final solution was Hitler's attempt to relocate the Jews into first Madagascar and then to the southeast of Russia in order to satisfy their long yearned for homeland state. But international Jewry would not settle for anything less than Israel. Israel was their first step toward taking over the Middle East and then the world. And who are these international Zionists? None other than your old friends, the Communist Party. Have you heard that communism is dead? Anybody who believes that communism is dead is a total idiot. Communism is alive and well, and we're watching a communist takeover of our planet in the form of our country submitting to the will of the Zionists, first to accept the attack in 9/11, which was an attack on our sovereign nation in three important vulnerable spots. We were attacked at the Twin Towers, we were attacked at the Pentagon, and but for the courageous crew and passengers on Flight 97, we would have been attacked in our White House. No one knows who the attackers were. Our government gave us the names of 19 hijackers and told us it was the Arabs. But 6 of those hijackers have come out and announced that they're still alive today. How could they have been hijacking our planes if they were still alive today? Obviously, we've been lied to. The point I'm trying to make is that we've been lied to about 9/11, just as we were lied to about the assassination of JFK, just as we were lied to when the ATF killed 88 men, women, and children in Waco, Texas, and told us that they had committed suicide. All of these records have been sealed. The first thing Americans need to do is demand that the government unseal the records so we can find out who is behind this shadow government. Who is ruling us? Have we been taken over by a foreign country? And if so, who is this country? Nobody knows the truth because the documents have been sealed. I'm simply calling for an investigation, a meaningful investigation, that we as Americans may have to pursue on our own since our government is not willing to do it. Michael Chertoff, the head of Homeland Security, was entrusted with that task. But there has been no meaningful investigation into 9/11. What happened when Michael Chertoff was supposed to be investigating was that suddenly we got this phony anthrax scare that took over the media for 10 days, which turned out to be a hoax perpetrated by a member of the FBI. The point is, it derailed the investigation. Then Michael Chertoff gave safe harbor to 3 cells of Israeli spies, one located in California, one located in New York, and one in the Midwest. These Israeli spies were never arrested or convicted. They were simply given safe harbor to Israel. One of these cells was seen taking pictures and laughing and dancing at the foot of the Twin Towers. That seems pretty nefarious to me. Another one of these cells of Israeli spies was located in California. They were pretending to be art students. There were 200 of them, and they were knocking on the doors of California senators and congressmen to find out what they could. We do not know who hit us in 9/11, and we're entitled to know. So if the government is not going to give us a meaningful investigation, we're going to have to investigate for ourselves. There are a few sites that have been doing this. One of them is called www.whatreallyhappened.com. A lot of people have visited that site, and in that site a few things are revealed to us. For example, the Twin Towers do not seem to be made architecturally in a way that would cause them to fall the way they did. It appears that there was some help in bringing them down. Some bombs planted within the building, very similar to what went on in the Oklahoma City bombing, which was blamed on a man who pled guilty, and we never got a chance to hear his trial, Timothy McVeigh, another important investigation that the American public was denied. There should have been a much better investigation into the Oswald assassination of Kennedy. Again, the perpetrator of the crime was murdered before a trial was possible, so we really don't know anything about the assassination of JFK. We're entitled to know. We're entitled to have information about our government. It is my opinion that the Mossad, not the Arabs, hit us in 9/11, that we have been taken over by Israel, and my evidence of this is that we've done nothing but make Israel happy ever since the attack on 9/11. We had no particular beef with Iraq. However, Israel has been trying to get rid of Iraq for at least 10 years so that they can have greater Israel. Israel wants to expand from beyond that tiny sliver of land we gave her in 1948 to it's called Greater Israel, which is all the land from the Euphrates to the Nile. This is an awful lot of land, and the question is, why do they want to expand? Is it because they believe they're God's chosen people, or is there some more nefarious reason? Could it be that these people want to take over the world by taking over Middle East oil as their first step? Are we, in fact, not looking at holy Jews who believe that they are on a religious quest? Might we not be looking at international communism, the most nefarious of all of the governments that the world has ever seen, in which the blood count in Russia was 70 million white Christian Russians who were murdered by Khazarian Jews. Later, we saw the Chinese go communist. They killed 35 million of their own people. These numbers are huge. We're talking about a bloodbath. These are not good people, and yet it's considered very antisocial to even suggest that communism could be a problem since the Berlin Wall fell down, much less to suggest that international Jewry and international communism are the same people. But that's what I believe. I believe that because when you look at the Communist Party, you see that it's in when they took over the when they assassinated the Tsar and Tsarina, when Lenin's people assassinated the Tsar and Tsarina and put communism into place. Remember, the first thing they did was they killed 30 million white Christian property owners in Russia. And remember that Russia was primarily a white Christian country at that time. Why, then, did the Communist Party have 50% of the party members Jewish? Since Russia was a white Christian country, how did it happen that 50% of the Communist Party was Jewish? How is it then that 95% of the Politburo in Russia, Communist Russia, was Jewish? It could only be because there was a takeover of the Jewish Bolsheviks, exactly as Hitler claimed, and for which reason Hitler insisted that the Jewish Bolsheviks leave Germany. And Hitler, of course, thought that the other white Christian countries, at that time America was 95% white Christian, over 50% were German, and so was England, 95% white Christian. So, of course, Hitler thought that the white Christian countries would support him in his stand against communism, but much to his chagrin, when he tried to pull away from the Jewish-controlled World Bank, he was assassinated. Well, his country was destroyed, just as JFK was assassinated when he tried to pull away from the Federal Reserve Bank, which is run by the same Jewish corporation. First of all, let me tell you what a Zionist is not. A Zionist is not a good, humble, religious Jewish person who has a genetic link to Israel. That's the Sephardic Jew, and he's the saint-like humanitarian that we've all come to regard with such high respect. A Zionist is a person who claims to be Jewish but is not, but is cloaking himself in the concept of Judaism so that he can involve himself in a world takeover, starting with Israel, taking over the Middle East for its oil, and then the plan is to take over the world in a complete totalitarian takeover. That's why people who study Revelations and have this ability to prophesy using both the Holy Scriptures and their psychic abilities always look at the Middle East and tell us this is where our problem is. But I do not believe that the Muslims are causing this problem. I believe it's the Zionists who are actually communists. They've just changed their name. This plan for world domination has been in place since it became apparent after the invention of the automobile that oil in the Middle East was going to be the lifeblood of the next society for hundreds of years because of the Industrial Revolution. It became apparent to the world leaders that whoever could take over the Middle East would control the world. And so the communist plan, the communist manifesto was drafted, along with another work of I'm not a Muslim. I'm a good American. I have a direct descent. I'm a direct descendant of one of the signatories on the Declaration of Independence, Charles Carroll, and I don't want to see my country taken over by a foreign force. It's my opinion that we have been taken over by these communists / Zionists, and because we still have freedom of speech and we still have the internet, we need to talk about it and resist it. We've seen the Arabs be set up by the Zionists several times so far. For example, June the 8th, 1967, approximately, was the beginning of the Six-Day War when Israel violated her agreement with the United Nations and attacked her five Arab nations in what she called a preemptive strike. Up until that time, we'd never heard the term preemptive strike, and it's obviously a euphemism for aggressive attack. As soon as Israel attacked Syria in order to steal the Golan Heights, the Americans sent their ship, their surveillance ship, into the area, which you may have heard of as the USS Liberty. It was a surveillance ship with the most highly decorated members of our intelligence committee on board to see what the heck was going on in the Middle East. Before long, these members of our intelligence community had their binoculars out, and they were seeing, yes, Israel is violating her contract with the United Nations and is aggressively taking the Golan Heights from Syria. And look over here. Turn your binoculars over to Egypt, and what do you see? You see 1,000 Arabs being taken out of Egypt, led to the desert, and they're being executed with bullets put in their heads. This isn't right. This can't be. We can't have this, because it was a violation of Israel's agreement not to expand. Israel was predicated on there were some terms when we created Israel. One of them was that Israel would allow the Palestinians to continue living on the Israeli side of the partition plan, and the other was that Israel would not expand past the partition plan. But Israel did this in 1967, and we saw it, and of course we didn't like it. So Israel attacked the USS Liberty, attempted to sink it with all of our men on board. And but for the fact that Israel made a mistake in the way they hit the USS Liberty, the ship would have gone down. Crew members say that helicopters were flying over the ship and were shooting out the lifeboats. You only do that when your intent is to kill all men on board. Fortunately, only 34 men were killed and 100 and some were severely injured with quadriplegic type of injuries. But they did live to tell the tale, and they put it on their website, which is www.ussliberty.org, and they said they were attacked and that the attack was intentional. However, our government says that it was ruled to be an accident. So here is another example of our government lying to us. The government tells us one thing, but the men who were on board tell us an entirely different story. And that assertion by the American government that it was an accident was still being made 2 weeks ago. So they are still lying to us. My point is that we as Americans have the right to our information. We have the right to demand that the records regarding the JFK assassination be unsealed. We have a right to have the records regarding the USS Liberty unsealed. We have the right to the records regarding the Waco attack unsealed. And we have the right to know who hit us in 9/11. I think we were hit by the Mossad, just as the USS Liberty was hit by the Mossad. And I think that because we were hit, we submitted totally to the attack, and that we're now under the domination of this foreign country, and we don't even know it. I think that because we're under the domination of the Mossad, or Israel, we have expended $100 billion of our dollars and many American lives to overtake and dominate Iraq, who is not an enemy to the United States, but has always been an enemy to Israel, because Israel's ambition is to control the entire Middle East, all of the land from the Nile to the Euphrates, which they say they can show Christians in the Bible belongs to them because God gave it to them 2,000, 5,000 years ago, because they're God's chosen people. Their ambition is clear. They want the entire Middle East. I don't believe it's because they're God's chosen people. I think they want the Middle East because they want to control the world. And whoever controls the oil in the Middle East controls the world. If I'm right, and we were attacked by the Mossad, and we're under the control of Israel, it's time for us to take ourselves out of the control of Israel. As Americans, we still have the right to freedom of speech, and we need to use it. So we come to these chat rooms and we discuss these things. I'm not a white supremacist because I don't believe that the white race, and I am a member of the white race, should control the world. I don't think anybody should. That's my point. I'm trying to speak as a white person in America with direct lineage to the founding fathers against world domination on the part of any race or any country, because such an attempt is doomed to failure. One group of people simply cannot control the entire world. I think that each country, each section of the world, each race, each community should control itself. I'm the opposite of a white supremacist. I don't want anybody supreme, and I don't want the communists supreme. What makes me weird, I think, from your point of view, is that I say communism is a threat. And you don't believe that, I'm sure, because we've been told over and over on the media, the communist-controlled media in America, that it's silly and stupid and crazy to worry about communism. But communism is my concern, and this discussion that I'm entering in, what I'm concerned about is communist world domination, the idea of a totalitarian one-world government taking over, which will result in chaos, which could result in the end of the world, in a horrible nuclear holocaust. So I am the opposite of a white supremacist. I am a white separatist. I'm a nationalist. I believe that America should concern herself with America's problems. White people should concern themselves with white people's problems. Black people should concern themselves with black people's problems. People in the city of Albany, New York should concern themselves with the city of Albany, New York. And there's nothing wrong with being loyal to your family, your high school, your race, your city, and your nation. The communists teach that there is something wrong with nationalism and that we should all be concerned about the entire world. That's what I disagree with. The United States of America is the light of the world. The United States of America was founded by the founding fathers in order to promote Western civilization and take it the next step in evolution out of the monarchies that controlled Europe. It was the founding fathers' vision that good people, responsible people, didn't need a king to tell them what to do. So they instituted democracy and allowed every good, responsible American the right to have make the same decisions that the king makes in the form of his vote. The premise was that good, responsible, educated, cultured people would come to the voting booth with the same sense of responsibility that previously only the highest level leaders had been expected to come to the table in order to support their decisions that controlled huge numbers of people. Our founding fathers said, we can control ourselves. We're good people. We don't have to be born to be kings. Each one of us can be a king. Each one of us can be expected to come to the voting booth and look at our society and make selfless decisions that will benefit all of us as a whole, because we are basically good people. So I think America has offered a tremendous light to the world in terms of bringing us out of the dark ages when we were all controlled by kings and dictators and monarchs. We're often criticized as being a racist country because we had slavery here, but so did all of the other countries. And yet, of all of those countries, we're the only country that fought a civil war and sacrificed 600,000 of our own men on the battlefield in order to put an end to slavery. So I certainly think the United States of America has done a great deal to serve the world. I do not think there were gas chambers. I do not think 6 million Jews died, and I do not think that Hitler had a plan to exterminate the Jews. I think those things have been implanted over the horrible pictures we've seen, the photographs, which are accurate, of course. The camps were a terrible thing. There was horrible suffering in the camps. Hitler had no right to use the Jews in the work camp of Auschwitz. That's against international law. When you put people who are enemies of the state into concentration camps, which you are entitled to do under international law, you are not entitled to use them as slave labor, which Hitler did. So yes, Hitler committed crimes against humanity. Nobody's saying he didn't. However, the exaggerations are so incredible that I can only assume, and I do assume, that there's been communist propaganda at work trying to convince the world that Hitler was a monster way above and beyond what he actually was. There's a plaque at Auschwitz. This is an example of how the numbers have changed. Even the Jews themselves admit that 6 million did not die. There's a plaque at Auschwitz that used to say that 4 million Jews had been killed at Auschwitz, this slave camp, which has been incorrectly characterized as a death camp. There were no death camps. But let's just start with the numbers, the 6 million figure. The plaque at Auschwitz, which was put up in 1948, said, this is where 4 million Jews died. That plaque has been taken down by the Jews themselves, who have to back down on some of this stuff, and the new number is 1.5 million. The new plaque says, this is the place where 1.5 million Jews died. Now that's a difference of 2.5 million. So clearly 6 million did not die. We know that at least 2.5 million have been taken off of that number, which brings it down to 4.5 million. And yet, and this is the horrible thing, in Germany today, if a German dares to say 6 million did not die, that's considered hate speech, and he goes to jail for 5 years. Now, you have to ask yourself, why does a person go to jail for 5 years for simply stating an opinion about a historical event? How can we have lost our concepts of the Founding Fathers, the right to free speech, free investigation, freedom of thought, to the point where we sit back and watch Germans go to jail for 5 years for claiming that 6 million did not die, when the Jews themselves admit that the number is down to at least 3.5 million. 6 minus 3.5 is 2.5. So I'm off the ball. The Jews themselves admit that it's down to 2.5 million. Now, that's a change they have made on their own plaque in Auschwitz. If the Jews admit that the figure is closer to 2.5, how can Americans who believe in the freedom of speech, which we claim and our founding fathers taught us is given to us by God himself, How can we stand by and watch people going to jail for claiming the same thing, that 6 million did not die in Germany? How can we as Americans do that?
Fact.
Well, there is a law in Germany on the books that sends you to jail for 5 years if you question details about the Holocaust, including the 6 million figure. And one of the people who are presently looking at a 5-year sentence is a man named Ernst Zundel, who published a book called Did 6 Million Die? The Truth at Last. After he was in danger, he realized he was in danger of being put in jail in Germany for 5 years, he moved to Canada, where he was convicted under an obsolete law which made it illegal from the times of the king to say anything about history that the king didn't agree with. And he was tried and he was convicted and he took it to the Supreme Court in Canada and he won. And they got rid of that old law. Now a person is allowed to discuss history even if it agrees with what the king says that history is. And I think it's very important that we have this type of law. I think that's what the United States stands for. Our founding fathers did not believe that the king was entitled to write history. Our founding fathers believed that we were entitled to investigate history. But Canada had the old law that came from the British Commonwealth, which said that no, you're not allowed to disagree with history. And that's the crime, that's the law that they convicted Ernst Zundel under, but he was able to overturn it in the Canadian Supreme Court, and now Canadians enjoy a much broader freedom of speech, more like what Americans enjoy, because he fought so valiantly against this ancient law, this oppressive law that says that the government, not the people, are allowed to write history. However, he's still in danger of being extradited to Germany, where he will serve 5 years if he's convicted for having disagreed with the history that we've been handed about World War II, about a country that lost the war, and of course history is always written by the victors of the war, and we know that it's not true. We know that 6 million did not die, and yet a man who's published a book called Did 6 Million Die? The Truth at Last is in danger of going to jail for 5 years. This is completely not American. And as far as the idea that God did not give us the right to free speech, well, I can agree with the atheistic point of view. I have tremendous respect for atheists, even though I'm not an atheist, because I know how much courage it takes to disagree with a religious majority and hold to your own values, your humanistic values, and take responsibility as a humanist for the fate of mankind. But if you don't want to see it as God-given rights, you surely can understand that these are natural rights. Human beings have the power of speech. They have hearts with emotions. They have minds with ideas. Certainly, it's obviously nature's intent that we should speak the truth from our hearts to the best of our ability. This freedom of speech is being taken away from us in the form of these hate speech laws in Europe. And that's what I'm talking about. No one should be afraid to question the 6 million figure in Germany or any other historical event on pain of going to jail. That's not human. Many people accuse me of being a national socialist or a white supremacist or a bigot or a racist or a hater or anything they can in order to label me with some kind of a sociopathic label that will prevent people from listening to me. No, I am not a National Socialist. I am a Republican. I voted for George Bush, and I think George Bush is doing a stellar job of standing up to what I see as a communist takeover of our country. Now, let's see. I am not denying that the Holocaust happened. I am denying 3 details about the Holocaust. I am not denying that there were stacks of emaciated, starving bodies that parents of the people in some of our own parents saw those people. It's absolutely true. Hundreds, possibly 350,000 people died in those camps of starvation and typhoid fever. That's terrible, and that's true. But there were no gas chambers. Why do I say there were no gas chambers? Because The Jews themselves are admitting that there were no gas chambers. It was communist propaganda perpetrated on the public in order to justify the invasion into Germany. Remember, at the time of the war, over 50% of Americans were German. There had to be a strong demonization of the enemy in order for Americans to be willing to fight their own ancestors. So these gas chamber stories came out. There were many other ridiculous stories. For example, Dr. Mengele has been characterized as sewing people's babies up. Two little twins, they claim, were sewed up to make them look like Siamese twins, and all kinds of atrocity propaganda came out of that war, as it does out of every war. Every war has atrocity propaganda, which is used to convince the people to go out and die on the battlefield. It's part of what countries do in order to get soldiers to die. There were no lampshades. Let's discuss the lampshade story. The lampshade story was brought up against a woman named Elsie Koch, who was tried for crimes against humanity in Germany based on this exhibit, which was a lampshade, which the prosecutors, the Jews, the Zionists, claimed was made out of human skin, human Jewish skin, the Jew skin lampshade story. You've all heard of it, and you've all seen pictures of it on the History Channel. But what you don't know is that that lampshade was sent to an American laboratory, and it was found not to be made out of human skin at all, but made out of goat skin. So there goes another one of the horrible myths that come out of this death camp lie, which we're entitled to have uncovered. I'm calling for a reversal of the law in Germany that makes it a crime to investigate the concentration camps, because unless the German people are allowed to investigate, to think, and to speak, we're never going to get at the truth. And as an American, I want to get to the truth about a whole lot of things. I'm tired of seeing information sealed out of the sight of the American public. I want to see the records regarding the JFK assassination. I want to see what happened in Waco, Texas. I want the truth about the USS Liberty. And I want the truth about 9/11. The government may be telling us the absolute truth. It may be true that Oswald, as a lone assassin, shot President Kennedy in 1963. It may be true that the people in Waco were crazy, horrible people who had amassed a huge arsenal of weapons and killed themselves when they saw themselves being intruded upon by the government. It may be true that the USS Liberty was accidentally attacked by Israel, and that all of the people on board who say the opposite are liars or paranoids. And it may be true that 19 Arabs hijacked planes and hit the Twin Towers, the Pentagon, and but for the bravery of the men on board on Flight 93, would have hit the White House as well. That's what the government tells us, and it may be true. Even though it is a little suspicious, isn't it, that six of those hijackers have come out and announced themselves and said, hey, I wasn't on the plane, here I am, I'm in Morocco, or wherever they are. One of them's in Morocco, and this was reported by the BBC and the Los Angeles Times. But whether or not the government is telling the truth, Americans have the right to know the truth, and so do the German people about the World War II concentration camps. We are entitled to have the records of these events made public. That's the point I'm trying to make. We are given the right to freedom of speech, freedom of information, freedom of thought, freedom to investigate history, but this freedom has been taken away from us by our government, who has sealed all of these records in the name of national security, in spite of the fact that there's no possible link between this information and national security. So I maintain, I'm not saying that I can prove this fact or that fact. I'm saying as Americans we're entitled to know the truth, and we're entitled to the information about these vital historical incidents, just as the Germans should be given the right to investigate their history, which is the Holocaust, or what I call the whole a hoax, because so much of the so-called history that we've been given has been proven not to be true. For example, one of the stories is, and we have witnesses who have gone and stated under perjury, that they were in soap manufacturing companies where they actually saw the bodies of Jews rendered down into fat, and the fat was used to make soap. Well, that story is so ridiculous that even the Jews are embarrassed, and they've come out publicly and apologized for that, and yet so many people still believe it. Well, why did they make up this silly story about the soap? Because there was money in it. They actually had these bars of soap, and they passed them around in PTA meetings to gullible ladies in America and asked them for contributions to send to Israel because of the horrible soap that the Germans had manufactured out of Jewish flesh or fat. The soap was called pure Jew fat soap. They got millions of dollars from these ladies from the PTA, which they sent to Israel. And this is just one tiny example of the ridiculous atrocity propaganda that has come out of the Second World War that needs to be questioned. I do not belong to any Christian identity separatist or white supremacist group. I am a Republican. I am an American. I'm a direct descendant of one of the founding fathers named Charles Carroll, whose signature shows up on the Declaration of Independence. And as a member of this fine lineage, I have been taught since I was born that freedom of speech is vitally important to a vital society. And that's what I'm promoting. As a descendant of one of the founding fathers, I am calling for an opening up and revelation of important documents that are being kept from us under seal, under the guise of national security, which could not harm our national security at all. It can only help the people to know the truth. We have the right to know the truth about the Waco incident. We have the right to know the truth about the assassination of JFK. We have the right to know the truth about Ruby Ridge. I think that's been sealed. 9/11 has been sealed. The assassination of JFK has been sealed. Did I say that? The USS Liberty has been sealed. And we have the right to have these records unsealed. I'm calling for an opening up of these sealed records so that we can know the truth about our own country and make wise decisions when we vote. It was not designed by the Founding Fathers to be a melting pot. Until 1945, we had 95% white Christians, and the rest of the people who were allowed in this country were considered guests of this very generous host, the American white Christians, who had the Statue of Liberty, making it clear that we did not discriminate against people because they were poor, because they were of a different race. But that didn't mean that we were willing to let them come into our country and destroy us. We still wanted to maintain white Christian values, meaning the Protestant work ethic, honesty, God being a God of love, not the kind of God that gives business favors in exchange for human sacrifice. We had an identity, and we should still cling to that identity. It's nice to have white picket fences. It's nice to have women who are not whores. It's nice not to have, for example, this movie 13 coming out, in which young girls are depicted as going out and sleeping with everybody they can have. We used to have censorship because it was understood that the movie industry was a form of propaganda, and we wanted our people to be taught the right way to live, not the wrong way to live. But since 1963, when the Civil Rights Act was passed, we've had the borders opened. We no longer allow white Christians in as immigrants. We give favoritism, actually, to Somalis. Hundreds and thousands of Somalis are being transplanted into our country in the most white areas of our country. For example, Lewiston, Maine, which is 100% white. They are so white in Lewiston, Maine, they don't let other white people come in there. They're so individualistic. You have to actually be a Maine person, a person from Lewiston, to be comfortable in Maine, because they have their own personal local identity. And white people have never objected to that. We've always thought it was quaint. Like the Amish, they're entitled to be who they are. Nobody cares. But suddenly, The architects of our culture are transplanting Somalians, who are the most alien of all of the Negro races, being tall and skinny and having no work ethic whatsoever. These are the people we fought in Mogadishu, in Somalia. We didn't like them then, and we don't like them now. We wouldn't go to Somalia to visit. It's such a sewer. And yet somebody has decided to take hundreds of thousands of Somalians and transplant them into those areas of this country that are most white in the racial in how they're racially composed. This is clearly an attempt to destabilize and demoralize the society as a whole. There's no good purpose served in taking people that you wouldn't even want to go visit and transplanting them into the center of your own country. It simply is not smart, and yet that's what we're doing. So, no, I don't think that we want to be a melting pot. I don't think we want to mix up all the races just to make it, you know, just to prove how much we love each other. I think people are better off living in their own communities, supporting their own ethics, listening to their own music, and then if they want to go and visit another group, they can do that. We have freedom. But let us also have freedom to associate with the people we like to associate. Let the blacks have their neighborhoods, if that's what they want. Let the Mexicans have their neighborhoods, if that's what they want. And let the whites have their neighborhoods, if that's what they want. That's what I mean by approving of separatism. I think people should have the right to exclusively associate with their own kind, if that's what they want to do. I promote snobbery. I think people should aspire to be better than what they are, and they should be careful with how they treat other people, how their manners develop, what they use to educate themselves with, what kind of culture they surround themselves with. I don't think we're born with an appreciation for Mozart. I think we have to learn that through exposure and training and teachers. So the idea that snobbery is bad is not an idea that I embrace. Snobbery simply means choosing to be with people of a better quality, with more education, better manners, more self-control, and more money. And I think the idea of being upwardly mobile is specifically American. In America, we have the right to become upwardly mobile. We don't have an entrenched class system or caste system. In America, you don't have to be born into the royal family to become the president or the king. We have a culture where you can aspire to be better. So snobbery, to me, is simply embracing, it's a slang word and a pejorative for people who want to be better. But I think that one of our purposes here on planet Earth, as we go towards salvation and come closer and closer to God, is to become better and better. We should become more sensitive to music, better able to express ourselves through art and science, and give up the bad, lower, more primitive elements of our own characters, which we all have to overcome. For example, we should not take drugs. We should not be alcoholics. We should not be sexually promiscuous. Our music can be better than rap music and bongo drums. These are choices that we have to make, each one of us, every single day. And I totally promote snobbery or upward mobility as a way to become better people in order better to glorify God. Let's assume that it is true, that it is the Christian duty of good people to take care of the Somalians. That does not mean that you have to destroy your own culture in order to do it. There are better ways to help the Somalians than to move them into Lewiston, Maine, or Phoenix, Arizona, or the Pacific Northwest, or Kansas. If you want to help the Somalians, don't put them into a situation where there's going to be racial friction. Relocate them to an area of the world where they have more in common with the people, not less in common with the people. It's my position that by transplanting the Somalians into all white communities, the architects of our society are trying to create chaos, which goes along with my belief that we are experiencing a communist takeover, which is based on the concept of chaos. A gentler way of helping the Somalians, if you really wanted to integrate them with another race, would be to find another race that has more in common, so there would be a gentler, easier integration taking place. and then of course they should be fed and housed, but you don't open your doors to everyone in the city just because you're moved to be kind to everyone in the city. To do so only destroys your ability to help other people. You should not be masochistic in your charity. Charity is supposed to strengthen the individual. It's supposed to make you have a better appreciation for yourself as well as your fellow man as you give gifts to those less privileged than yourself. You realize and you feel in yourself this strength. The worst thing you could do would be to open the doors of your house and let everyone from the city come in and take everything you own. Then you would not be able to give anything to anybody. The point I'm trying to make is that it's not wise to destroy yourself in the interest of making charitable contributions to other people. If you want to take 10% of your income and donate it to a cause, that's your right, and I would applaud you for it. But I would not suggest that you take the locks off your doors and notify everyone by an ad in the paper that they can come into your house and steal everything you have. Take everything you have because you've decided to give it to them. I would say that that's unwise. I do not think that it has strengthened America's white neighborhoods to transplant Somalians into those white neighborhoods. I disagree that the Somalians have anything to contribute to the white neighborhoods, and I don't think that's why it was done. I think it was clearly done in an effort to demoralize and destabilize the white neighborhoods because we are experiencing a communist takeover, one of the planks of which is to disturb, destroy, massacre, or mongrelize the white race. This is genocide that I'm talking about, and I do believe that there has been a call of genocide on the white race, and I think it's a mistake. I don't think it's going to make the world a better place because you destroy white people. I don't think white people are bad people. I don't think anybody is bad just because they're of a certain race, including white people. So what I'm saying is people have a right to gather together among their own kind, if that's what they want to do, and the architects of our society should not disturb those gatherings. If you want to help the Somalians, take 10% of your income and send it to the Somalians. Or if you want our government to help the Somalians, let them be fed and sheltered. But don't use charity as a means of destabilizing a racial group that you hate. That's what I'm claiming is wrong. It clearly doesn't make the white neighborhoods like Lewiston, Maine, the Pacific Northwest, Oregon, there's a transplantation going on in Arizona and Kansas. If you were really trying to do other than create chaos, as I said, you'd find locales where they would be accepted easily and then make your contributions and give them the housing and the food that you want to give them. But don't use them as a tool to create destabilization and anxiety. I'm saying that cultures have the right to exist with their uniqueness, with their qualities, with their identities, even the white culture. We already vigorously fight for the rights of other cultures to maintain their identities, but we have no regard for the white culture, which has a very distinct and unique identification. White people like certain kinds of music. They like to dress in a certain way. They have certain kinds of manners. We know there are differences between the races. For instance, one thing that's been tested is that white people like greater area of space between themselves and the person in the room next to them than do, for example, Mexicans. This is a difference. And people should not have to be accommodating constantly for other people's desires. If people would stay in their own cultures, they would be more comfortable. They wouldn't have to be constantly accommodating for these differences. I'm saying that intermingling should not be mandated by the architects of our society. It should be voluntary. If your experience is that you're made a richer, more well-rounded, happier person by intermingling with other people, you certainly should have the right to do that. But if it's hard on you, if you're more comfortable, more serene by being among your own kind, then you should have that right. Different cultures have different social contracts that they adhere to. Every society, every civilization has its own way of doing things. You find that out when you start traveling around the world and you see this town, everybody wears this kind of clothes. This town, everybody eats this kind of food. And as a traveler, you accommodate to these differences and you enjoy these differences. But what I'm pointing out is that every culture has their own social contract. The white race tends, or at least the upper class white race, is much quieter than the Mexican race. This is just the way it is. When you go into a Mexican neighborhood, you can't help but notice that they have very loud electronic music coming out of all of their rooms and apartments, and they love it. And there's nothing wrong with that. But when you go into a white upper-class neighborhood, you find out that they're very, very quiet. And occasionally you might hear some classical music, and they all love it. But you see, music is one of the most... I always generalize. Generalizing is an acceptable debate tool to make generalizations. And I am saying that, generally speaking, the social contract between the Mexicans, or at least that group of Mexicans that really enjoy mariachi music, is a different social contract than people who like classical music. And yet, unless you live separately, you can't but notice the friction that occurs when one man of one type of culture insists on playing very loud mariachi music, and he's living next door to somebody who only likes classical music. I'm saying the man who likes classical music should not feel guilty for seeking out a neighborhood where everybody likes classical music, and that the man who likes mariachi music should not feel guilty in choosing a neighborhood where his kind of music is played. And I'm only using music as one factor in culture. There are many, many differences in culture. Each culture has its uniqueness, and it's easier for people of a certain culture to live exclusively with people of that culture. And that's what I'm saying, and that's, of course, what the discussion is about. Well, that's all for tonight, folks. And just remember, when you think about atrocity propaganda and propaganda of any kind, realize that it's not always the truth. Some propaganda is the truth, and all propaganda should be. The proper place for propaganda in any culture is a tool for the government to use to explain to the people matters that they can't understand because they aren't close enough to the situation to know. So the government has propaganda experts to disseminate information to the public and let them know what's happening. But sometimes propaganda is pure deceit. And when you have purely deceitful propaganda, you have a government that's out of control, and that needs to be brought into control. The propaganda that came out of the Second World War is the worst propaganda we've ever seen in all of history. The Holohoax is the worst fraud perpetrated on the human race in probably 1,000 years. We have to fight this deceit. We have to put pressure on Germany to roll back her anti-hate speech laws. We have to make it known to all of Europe that as white people, we're not going to stand by and watch our freedom of speech be taken away from us merely because it offends a certain racial or political or religious group. We have to fight for the right to be who we are, even if we're not particularly nice, because that's the right we have. It's a God-given right to be just the way God made us. Good night, and I'll be talking to you soon. This is Mona Montgomery signing off on The Holohoax.